welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls, and we'll also be talking about the recent trip to Africa. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited to announce that tonight we have two very special guests with us. I'd like to welcome Jen Colmore and Dave McKay, both of whom are monks at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murfrees, California. Welcome, Jen and Dave.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, Jen, are you there?
I am. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you now.
Okay, good.
Is Dave there too?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you. Great.
Oh, good.
One, two, three of us. Huh? I'm always excited, you know, when technology works for us.
As are we, having just come back from Africa.
Yes, yes, I know the experience. Jen and Dave, I wanted to spend a minute or two just talking about an exciting upcoming event that's going to happen in about 3 weeks.
Yep.
And that is the annual celebration in Palo Alto.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if either of you two wanted to start us off there.
Well, it's our yearly event that we have to invite the whole community, you know, folks who are affiliated with us in any way, or even if they're not, they might come with a friend who's affiliated with us, to celebrate everything that we've been doing in the last year through Living Compassion. And it's in Palo Alto. And do you have the times in front of you, Michael?
I do. It's 7 to 9 p.m. on Thursday, May 17th.
Yep. And the neat thing about this year's event is that we're working on opening it up to everyone, so not just people who can come actually physically to the local event, but for people to participate from afar as well.
Right, and I think what you're referring to is the webcam, which is going to be available for the event.
That's right.
Yeah, I just talked to our techno guru, Wiz, a little while ago about that, and he is hot in pursuit of the technology to do that. So it's really kind of exciting.
Great. Yeah, let me give out the web address. So you can find all the information you want about the annual celebration at www.livingcompassion.org/annual celebration. It's pretty easy to remember.
Exactly. Yep.
We make it simple.
Yep.
And as I understand it, the webcast information is going to be up there soon about how people can tune in and see it over the web if they're not right here in Palo Alto.
Great.
Great. And also, we ask people to sign up, register for the event by May 10th, which is a week from today.
Yeah. Yep.
And the event is free. And we want to know you're coming so we can save a seat and have enough snacks for you and all that stuff.
That's right.
Fantastic.
Great. Jen and Dave, I've been reading very exciting things about the both of you.
Huh? Really?
And your jet-setting lifestyle.
That's really funny.
We have just stepped on the monastery property literally 10 minutes ago.
Wow. Wow.
So it's true. Everything you read is true.
We're covered with dust from all over the world at this point.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
And I've had a great time reading the blog, and I suspect that some people listening have been following the blog just like me, and perhaps others have not.
Yeah.
So maybe you could give an overview of, you know, what happened, what's in the blog, what's not in the blog, what's going to come, all of that.
Yeah. So it occurs to me neither of us was able to listen to the radio show last week when Sherry was on, I believe, live, just having gotten back from Africa. Is that right, Michael?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So did she cover any of the major highlights with you then?
You mean like, water! not to give anything away, but she did mention the water, yes.
Yeah, so that was definitely the big achievement, I think, of this trip, and possibly of the project so far.
Yeah, it was my favorite part for sure, because they, I mean, the machine that was in there, it was just so fun because it was so huge and so loud. And, you know, nobody there, I think, had ever seen anything like it before. And so we attracted people from all over with, the, you know, this huge thing towering against the kind of the African sky and all the noise that it made. And we had, you know, crowds around, including my favorite part, I think, was all the kids. There were kids everywhere, including in all the trees. And they're all just sitting there sort of gaping at what was happening. And, I mean, it was one of those just huge events. And then when the water came out of the ground, it's just, you know, it's just one of those moments that you can't, you know, you just can't really describe because it's so wonderful.
Yes. Do either of you want to talk a little bit about, just very generally, about Cantalomba and the conditions and what has been passing for water and what the new possibility is now?
Sure, yeah. So Cantalomba is a slum area on the outskirts of the city of Ndola. Ndola is Zambia's second largest city. Lusaka is the capital of Zambia. And Ndola is kind of in the, if you look at on a map at Lusaka, you basically go directly due north, and Ndola is at the very top of Zambia, close to the border of the Congo. And so Cantalomba is an area that was actually never intended to be a neighborhood or a part of the city. It's a squatter area. It's right next to a big cemetery, and it's a typical kind of developing world city where people came in and they had nowhere to live and no money to buy houses and no money to build houses. And so they just took local resources and started making their own houses. And so that's how Cantalomba started. And it's now a community of about 800 households with 11,000 people. And the city has begun to recognize that, you know, it's a place where people live. It's a, you know, they realize that resources need to now come in here. But, of course, the government doesn't have the resources needed to put into the community. And so when they see a group like us coming, they're quite grateful and gracious in terms of helping us do the work that we're doing, because they realize that there's a shortfall in the resources that they have, and here's an opportunity to bring in the resources into this community in a way that they're not able to do.
We even got to meet on this trip the provincial minister, who's the head honcho of the whole province, and that was really fun because it's a, you know, it's a really nice office, you know, really nice for African standards, huge desk, you know, and this guy's a, you know, is a suave politician, and we walked in there and told him about the project, and he basically said whatever you want, I'll help you with, I'll provide it, because he, like Jim's saying, I think, you know, they just so need the help to, you know, to bring sustainable living conditions to these people.
And we knew he was serious about taking care of us when we heard 2 days later, Teresa, who's the Zambian person who coordinates our projects there, she said she had talked to the RDC, which is the Resident Development Committee. Every area of the city has its own RDC.
I see.
She had talked to the head of the RDC, and the RDC had said to her, oh, I got a phone call from the provincial minister, and he told me we need to take care of you people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like he has a lot of pull.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Great.
So for example, the water that folks in Cantalomba are drinking now is piped in, but it comes through spigots that are just, they're community spigots. They don't have on-off switches. Sometimes they flow, sometimes they don't. If there isn't water pressure, there's no water that comes out. If there is, the water comes out, and when no one's capturing it into a bucket or something, it just flows down the street, creating, you know, mud puddles and mosquito factories and all of that.
Oh, wow.
And even though it's supposedly treated, it's not, you know, it's got all kinds of bacteria and things in it that people
uh-huh.
are constantly getting sick from, and most people in Cantalomba don't have the resources to either buy chlorine to treat the water or buy charcoal to boil it. And so they're forced to drink water that they know is causing them to be sick.
Right.
I don't know if Sherry told you the story of, you know, so we dug the well, and then we got water, and then we had this I don't know how long was it, Jim, like 36 hours, mm-hmm. where we essentially held our breath for 36 hours while we got a sample of the water, and we took it to the hospital, and there's a water treatment kind of testing place in the hospital, while we were waiting for them to test it. And you know, so we're waiting and waiting and waiting, and there's all this pressure on us to you know, to get an answer so we can keep drilling. And then finally the results came in, and it was clean. The water was clean, and I wasn't there. Jim will have to describe what happened at
well,
the compound.
We were visiting the compound that day, and we came in, and we said, oh, you know, the water's clean. great, great. And little did we know, someone then, like a town crier, took that news and started spreading it all over the compound.
Oh, wow.
And after about 20 minutes, we were standing there, and we happened to be with a fellow from Washington, D.C., who we're working with to help get some funding for the project. And then all of a sudden, we heard singing and kind of movement coming from far off, and we see this group of women coming towards us just at the top of their lungs, singing and dancing, and the woman standing next to me translated, and they were singing something that was along the lines of, you told us that something was going to happen here, and now the work that you are doing is being seen.
Wow.
It was very moving.
Wow.
To see that kind of display of what it really meant to them.
Yes, I project that, you know, it's more than anything, it's the attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're so ignored, even by their own city, essentially. It's right next door. They're just ignored. Nobody goes there. Nobody. They never get any resources. They never get any funding. It's like nobody cares. And then suddenly, here's a group of people who, from a really long way away, who want to give them that kind of attention. And you know, I project that that's essentially what they're responding to.
Wow, wow, responding to that intention that you're bringing to them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a neat place. You know, what I think probably the most interesting thing to me about Cantalamba is that, you know, even though it looks really different than what we're used to, and, you know, of course, the living conditions are completely different, the people in a lot of ways are the same, in the sense that, you know, everyone you run across is, you know, people have the same kindness. They have the same openness. They have the same, a lot of, you know, ambition, wanting to help, wanting to make a difference. You know, essentially, you know, when I look at myself and I look at the people that we run across, I just don't see any difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been the biggest thing for me in all this, is just to see how common our humanity is and how common kind of what we really look at as the good parts of what it is to be a human being, mm-hmm. how universal that is. And I don't know, there's something just really moving and really valuable in having that experience.
That sounds really exciting. Yes, yes. And I as you say that, I'm reminded of the retreats that happen each summer where people, you know, often from the U.S., go over there with you and spend a couple weeks and working on the projects. And it's really, you know, from those blogs as well, I get that same experience of our common humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems like it has to be that way. You know, that it's not like a one-directional project. It's a two-directional project. So we have material resources and energy that we can bring. And I don't know if I have good words for what they have to provide, but it's something big. And just being there and having the experience of being with those people, it completely changes your worldview. So, you know, a big part of our intention with this is not just to help people in Cantalamba, but to help the people here to have that experience so that, you know, everyone benefits from the kind of, from bridging that distance and the sort of the heart-to-heart communication that's happening.
Yes, yes. What comes to mind as you say that is that not only are we assisting them in their transformation, they're assisting us in our transformation as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that always strikes me, and as you say, Michael, when we bring retreatants with us in the summer times, I hear it over and over, there's just a sense of, wow, there's so much spirit and life in these folks where, you know, we feel like if I were in that position, I don't know. I mean, we're just so used to kind of complaining and, you know, all the
yeah.
rant that goes on inside of all of our heads of, that's not quite right, I don't want that, that's not good. And yet you come across these people who are, you know, kind of on the brink of survival, and there's so much, as Dave says, there's so much kindness and generosity and spirit in there that it's just, it's very inspiring to be around.
Yes, yes. It's really exciting. And it's exciting for me when you're over there working and just, you know, refreshing and waiting for the blog and just the blog there. And it's a lot of fun because you put so much energy and so much detail in it. I really do feel like I'm just walking down the street with you there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting to hear you say that. I just had the image of kind of like being little conduits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yeah.
like we're sitting there in front of our computers. I mean, if you could see us, I mean, the conditions that we're in trying to do this and, you know, trying to get, like, these pictures, which are, you know, big chunks of information, apparently, trying to get them through 12,000 miles through all this crazy technology. And, you know, but when we're successful, we're kind of like we're people get to see through our eyes, in a sense. And I hadn't really seen it exactly that way before.
Yes. And the other thing that I told Sherry last week, my experience of reading the blogs now, is it seems like, you know, a year or two ago, I could read the blog and I could see, oh, yeah, this person, you know, lives in the house and takes care of the kids, and so the person does this. But now you have so many relationships that are so deep that there's so much going on, I can barely keep track of everybody.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was writing something today, Michael, where I was sort of, you know, pulling some information together for myself and listing the relationships that we deepened on this trip. And it's just, I mean, the team is just growing exponentially every time we go.
Yes.
Well, and then perhaps one of the largest of those is a woman named Gaudencia, who is a contractor in Zambia. Probably there's been talk about her on the radio show before. I'm not sure. But, you know, we met her on our last trip, and during this trip, we talked to her some more, and we agreed to hire her to be the contractor for our medical building that's going up.
Yeah.
And made a whole contract and everything. And she actually, at least conceivably, theoretically, is breaking ground today.
Wow.
May 1st on the building.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, I spoke with both Teresa and Gaudencia on the phone yesterday, and they were both really excited because they had just gotten home from a community meeting in Cantalomba. So they'd gone to Cantalomba, and they'd, you know, brought everyone together, which, of course, is not send everyone an email and get, you know, it's walk around the compound with a megaphone and say, come meet at this time in this place. And so they all come onto the property, and apparently it was just a fabulous meeting. People are very excited. One of the biggest things, as you can imagine, that people are excited about is the employment opportunity that just this building project is going to bring to the compound.
Yes.
And so on Saturday, all volunteer labor is coming in to clear the property, you know, to get it level, to clear it out, to take out, you know, the tall grasses that are in the building site. So I said to Teresa, you take a million pictures.
Yeah.
And she said she had taken pictures at the community meeting. So watch for those on the upcoming.
Oh, great. That's exciting. And the last thing that I wanted to say about this, and the thing that always strikes me, is the real power of conscious, compassionate awareness in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is so true. I was looking at that for myself. I had the really an opportunity I'm really grateful for of going straight from Africa to a retreat in North Carolina that I just returned from today, and it's just so true what you're saying. It's like without that, in a way, there would be any point in doing the work we're doing in Africa. But because that's there, and that is the intention behind the work, you know, to be present and to be as kind and compassionate with ourselves as we want to be with the world, and to, you know, put ourselves in a position to offer that from kind of the overabundance of gratitude that comes with, just, you know, just having that at the center of one's life. It's just, it's like it ties it all together in something that makes it just really, really beautiful. And I just been experiencing a lot of gratitude for that also.
Yes. I want to give you two an update, and that is that we have two callers on hold.
Okay.
And I didn't know if you wanted to talk with them or if you wanted to talk a little bit more about Africa before we get to them.
Sure, let's take the callers.
Okay, great. I'd like to welcome Roger from Vermont. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hi, Roger.
Hello?
Can you hear us, Roger?
I can just barely hear you.
Oh, shoot. Let me try something.
Can you hear me, Roger?
Yes, I can.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, well, let's just go and let's see what happens.
Okay. Well, it's really exciting to hear you folks talk about your work in Africa. It's very inspiring. So I want to thank you for that.
Boy, you know, Roger, I really can't hear you. Can you hear him, Michael?
I can hear Roger fine, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe, Roger, if you could speak up a little bit, if that's a possibility.
Yeah, how's that?
Oh, that's better. That's
okay.
Better.
I was just saying that I wanted to thank you for reporting on your work in Africa. It's very inspiring to hear that.
Oh, okay. You're quite welcome. It's our pleasure, as you can imagine.
Yeah, and I'm calling because I started doing this, the retreat in the Making a Change for Good.
Oh, great.
In the back of that book.
Mm-hmm. In Sherry's new book.
Yes.
Yep.
And I just have, I kind of wanted to report on or get some guidance or reflection or something on something that I've noticed, which is that it seems like as I do the retreat, things are changing for me, but I really, it's not something that, it feels like it's not something that I'm doing.
You say it feels like it's not something that you're doing.
Yeah, it feels like sort of there's something bigger than me that is kind of, I don't really know what the words are. It just feels like it's not, you know, things are happening, and I don't know why.
Is it one of those where you kind of feel like you've kind of just stepped out into something that's you know, many, many times larger than you? It's almost like it's kind of like you're participating in something. You're not making it happen. You're not kind of calling the shots, but you've said yes to something, and then suddenly it's just carrying you along to where it wants to go.
Yeah, that's a really good way to describe it. And it's not as if all of the other stuff, the self-hate and the, you know, all my sub-personalities aren't still operating just as strong as they ever were. It's as if there's something else that's sort of, I'm connecting with something that feels like it's kind of underneath all of that.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, you know, what you're describing is a radical shift in your point of view. Yeah? I'm projecting from someone who is inside the suffering or the karma, however you want to say that, to someone who is outside of it, you might say, kind of positioned in life, going along as you're watching the karma.
Yeah, that's a really good. I couldn't have exactly used those words, but I think that the main thing in it is it feels like there's no I in it,
mm-hmm.
if I could say that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's what makes those kind of experiences possible, isn't it? Because if there's an I there, you know, if there's someone there who's having the experience you're having, it blocks everything up, and then you're just kind of the only option you have is to try to, you know, try to make some kind of difference with the experience you're having. But when you let go of I, it's like all of life gets behind you and things are happening that you have no idea are going to happen and are unplanned and uncontrolled, but in some way, in some kind of magical way, they're for your good.
Yeah, yeah. That's really, thanks for saying that. That's really helpful to hear it stated that way. It's weird because it feels like I, you know, decided to do this because I had some ideas about how this was going to help me.
Uh-huh.
But it's like now that sort of seems like a subplot kind of.
Uh-huh.
You know,
that's
like
not what's going on at all anymore, is it?
Excuse me?
That's not what's going on at all anymore, is it?
No, no. It's like you say, there's something bigger that I feel like I'm being kind of, my eyes are being opened to something bigger that's right here,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not, it's like I'm not involved in it, except I'm participating in it.
Right, and of course, as you know, that's just so fundamental to the practice that we do.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, that's what Zen is all about, is seeing through I, you know, seeing through this illusion that we have that we are in control of our lives and somehow separate from our experience, and, you know, attempting to through an act of our will to kind of obtain the life that we believe that we want for ourselves. You know, that's the way that we all struggle and that we all suffer. And, you know, this practice that we do, instead of focusing our attention outward in that way on the circumstances of our lives or even on our own experience, it asks us to turn that focus inside and see, well, who is this I? Or we might even say, what is this I who is in relation to this experience as if it's, you know, mine, as if it's personal? And then
right.
we see that we're trapped in that I, and I think this is the experience that you're describing, and we let go, then suddenly we realize that we don't have to control our experience. And in fact, that the life that we want is the one that's right there in front of us once we let go.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, the words that come to me are like words like, you know, magical mm-hmm. Well, that's the word. It just feels like, you know, I'll be doing something and all of a sudden there's some kind of a magical quality to it, just because I'm there,
yeah.
not because of something I'm doing.
Yeah, and what you're saying, you know, just because I'm there, that's the key piece of it, isn't it? Because that's what's going on. There's not an I there, but you're there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the, you know, you're describing being present. And, of course, that is where all the magic is, because the world of I is completely empty of anything like that magic, because it's all struggle, and it feels like life's against us, and we're never going to get what we want, and we feel deprived, and we feel cut off. But that's just the experience of living inside of I. Without the I, then we're connected. It's like, you know, life really loves us, and it's like life is constantly giving us everything that we want. And, you know, it's so easy to believe that, well, there's something about what I'm doing that's causing that to happen.
Uh-huh.
But in the way that you're describing it, that's not what's going on at all. It's just letting go of that illusion of I, and it's the step from the world of suffering to a world, like you're saying, that's full of magic and possibility.
Yeah, and it has something to do with committing to the retreat mm-hmm. and just turning the page in the morning and reading what's there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like all of a sudden there's this world of possibility right there.
Yeah, it's like the little kind of retreat at the back of the book
yeah.
is a mechanism. It's kind of a tool that helps you to move from a kind of the self-centered world of I to this other world that we're talking about, where you feel more aligned with life. You've got a kind of a practical way, like a practical thing to assist you in making that movement.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I'm just tremendously grateful, you know, for that.
Yeah, me too, because, you know, that's what this whole thing's about. That's, you know, we've created a structure, even, you know, the work in Africa.
Uh-huh.
We've created this huge structure for everyone to participate in, and that's the whole point. It's not even about, you know, we were just talking about all this work we're doing in Africa. It's not even really about that, even though the things are really wonderful.
Yeah.
It's about, we need a way, kind of like those exercises in the back of the book, we need a way to participate. We need something to give ourselves over to so that we can have that experience that you're talking about of just the magic and the joy and the well-being that comes up with, you know, living with our motivation being something other than what I want and what I feel like is right and good or any of those kinds of things.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to hear your voice.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for joining us, Roger. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have two special guests with us today. Jen Colmore and Dave McKay are monks at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute. Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Jen and Dave, I have two more callers standing by. Jen and Dave, are you there?
We're here.
We're here.
Okay, great. We have two more callers standing by.
Excellent. Let's take them.
I'd like to welcome Jenny from Seattle. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hey, Jenny. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Oh, here.
Can you hear us, Jenny?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. We're having a little technical difficulties here.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can, yep.
Okay. I just have a question I've been thinking about regarding how my beliefs in how things work shape how I interpret my experiences.
Can you say that part again? How your beliefs, and then what?
How my beliefs shape how I interpret my experiences in life.
Shape your experiences in life.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yep, I'm getting just the edge of it, so I think I'm getting the gist. You said you're looking at how your beliefs shape your experience of your life.
Yeah, shape how I interpret my experiences. And I guess you guys touched on it a little bit already. You were saying things like that life will give you what you need when you need it, and some things Sherry has said in her books, like the universe has no intention of causing suffering.
Right.
And I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on how you come to those beliefs, or whether you just choose to believe them because that's what you believe.
And when you're saying how you come to those beliefs, are you talking about the belief that the universe has no intention of causing us suffering?
Yeah, that one, or I guess any of the other ones that you guys mentioned tonight, like that the life will provide you with what you need, those types of things.
Right, yeah. Well, it's a really interesting point because, in fact, I would say, and this is one of those places where you could kind of look to your own experience, that, in fact, it's not a belief, it's an experience. So we go along, let's say, we begin an awareness practice, maybe for the reason you're talking about, because we get to a place where we see that our beliefs and assumptions about our lives, about the world in general, about life, are getting in the way of us receiving what we actually have in our lives. So maybe we begin to do an awareness practice, and we bring attention and awareness to our beliefs, and we begin to see how those beliefs are unconsciously kind of running the direction of our lives, let's say.
Right.
And as we do that, we begin to see that, in fact, it seems that life doesn't have it in for us, right? That there is not kind of a... there isn't a sense that life wants me to suffer, quite the opposite, the way we were just looking at with the last caller, that there can be a sense, a growing sense of that exactly what I need is presented to me in my life at the moment that I need it. Now, is it always the thing that I would have asked for and I would have wanted? No, not necessarily. So does that make sense that it's actually an experience, not so much that I now I believe that life is good, whereas before I believed that life was suffering.
Right, so you're saying that through doing your awareness practice you came to a different experience of how things work around you?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. That as we bring awareness to our lives, it's not so much that we change our beliefs. You know, I did believe these things, and now I believe these things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more just our own, it's like our experience of our own life changes. So, you know, you hear people say things like, when they've been doing awareness practice for a while, nothing in my life has changed, but everything is completely different.
Right.
So maybe the content of my life is the same. Maybe what used to cause me suffering before, I now have a completely different experience of that very same thing.
Mm. So it's just for you, it's just evolved for you through this practice then, coming
yeah.
to those as you, ways of interpreting.
As you look at that for yourself, what have you found? What have you seen about it?
What's that?
As you have looked at that question for yourself, as you've been kind of looking at how beliefs about your life shape your life experience, what have you seen about that?
Well, I've noticed that a lot of the things I grew up thinking don't really apply anymore, and that they do cause me a lot of pain. But in coming to some different understandings, it feels like kind of a gamble to try to live from a different interpretation of things.
Did you say it feels like a gamble?
Yeah, like in choosing to interpret it differently, I might be doing it wrong.
You might be doing it wrong. Uh-huh.
It's just, it feels like a leap or something.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And
yeah. So you're seeing that the set of beliefs that you held since you were young really no longer applies, and yet they're sort of not, you're not sure what the next thing is. It feels like there's a leap that needs to happen, and there's some, how would you describe it? Some, is it a fear or a?
Yeah, I'd say there's fear and some confusion.
Some confusion, uh-huh.
And it just feels really risky.
Yeah, yeah, very risky. And you said it feels like you could do something wrong. You might do it wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so from the perspective of doing awareness practice, of course, all we're doing is just going along and watching all of that and seeing. So as you begin the process of questioning your beliefs, and then you watch what arises from that, that there's some, it feels risky. It feels like there's a leap. It feels mm-hmm. like you're not sure what comes next. And that we're just watching all of that and just seeing what comes up as we go through that process.
Mm.
And then conditioned mind comes in to want to, you know, well, you might do it wrong. You better be careful.
Right.
Right. But in fact, our job is only just simply to go through and to see, to watch, to see what comes up as we're beginning to question what we never have questioned before.
Right. So I guess it's just letting it evolve and letting the process happen. Like, I don't have to force a leap or a jump.
Right.
But just continuing to be aware will move me where I need to move.
Uh-huh. And do you participate in a sitting group or anything up in Seattle?
No, this is it, really.
The radio show. What did you say, this is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's perfect. Doing things like listening to the radio show, or I don't know if you have any of Sherry's books or CDs, that kind of thing, but exposing yourself to what we would call, what Buddhists call Sangha, groups of people who are doing awareness practice also,
mm-hmm.
and having that shared experience with other people of doing the process of opening yourself up to seeing, because it is challenging. It does take a lot of courage. It's shaking up a system that's been in control of our lives for a long time. And so as we do that, as we begin to shake things up, there's a lot that can come up from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so to reach out and find support for yourself in that process.
Okay. Well, thanks. That helps a lot.
Thanks for calling, Jenny.
Okay. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jenny. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have two special guests with us today, Jen Colmore and Dave McKay, are monks at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California, and they're just back from a wonderful trip in Africa. Jen, I wanted to mention one other resource for people who are not physically close to other sitting groups, which is that Sherry sometimes does email classes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one coming up in August as well.
Yeah, that's a really good forum for that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'll be great. I'm looking forward to doing it myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a way of accessing the Sangha that Jen was talking about, really, wherever you are.
Yes. Yes, definitely. And we have another caller.
Great.
Okay, super.
I'd like to welcome George from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, George.
Hi.
How's it going?
Well, pretty good. Hi, Dave.
Hey.
Hi, Jen and Michael.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, I can hear you much better. Or I can hear one of you very well. The other two are very...
We're fading in and out here.
Okay. I can hear you well enough, okay. I think. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you good.
Okay. Well, I wanted to... I guess, first of all, I just want to express a lot of appreciation for Open Air and the archives and the podcasts. They have been a real blessing for me recently. I've been on my back a lot lately.
On your back?
On my literally physically on my back. I it started with a hernia and then developed into sciatica. I don't know whether the two are related or not, but they're both in the same side of my body. And I had an MRI recently, and I have some lumbar problems, herniated discs, and so on. And supposed to go
really
in and talk to a surgeon
about
back surgery, which
to, huh?
And I'm trying to balance that all out with what I'm learning on the internet and what I think is the best thing for me at this point, and so on. So, but in any case, I'm able to stand up and walk around for a while, and then I have to go lie down. And I'm able to sit for a while, but then I have to go lie down. So I spend about half my time lying down, and I can't meditate. I can't get in a meditative position at all. It's just too painful. So, so I lie on my back, and I put on the headphones, and I started at the very first Open Air that was podcasted, and I'm just working my way all the way up through. I listen to three or four of them a day sometimes.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And
talk about a way to support yourself in a
it's this wonderful spiritual shower that I take every day. Just very, very filling, very uplifting, cleansing. It's wonderful, and it has, it has penetrated my entire day. So here I am with all of these physical problems, which I've never had any serious physical problems in my life, and all of a sudden it seems like life on the physical plane is catching up with me.
Mm-hmm.
But the archives are just, it's a wonderful opportunity to just lie there and let it all sink in.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Yeah, it's really wonderful to hear.
And when I heard that you and Jen were on tonight, I wanted to ask you about, and this is something that keeps coming up for me, because I've had, I used to be in the farming business. I've done a lot of farming in my life, and I've been a gardener for my entire life, and in fact, I can get out on my hands and knees and dig with my trowel in the dirt, and that's been the best physical therapy for me in
uh-huh.
this particular time. But I keep thinking about Cantalomba and the projects over there, and what does it look like, or what's being done as far as food production, local food production.
Oh, you're curious about the food production.
Yeah.
Well, actually, George, can you hear me okay?
Just barely.
Okay. All about. It's interesting because when we're there in the rainy season, which this last trip and the trip before that was the rainy season, there is some local food production because there's rain. So
yeah.
People tend to have their own little gardens and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
There's no formal irrigation to speak of. So
yeah.
Once the rain stops, that stops.
Uh-huh.
There's a ton of potential for it. People really, really want it.
Yeah.
And it's a relatively easy thing for us to begin to bring in. So probably even starting this summer, we'll start to look at that.
Uh-huh.
Even on a larger scale, what we've been talking with some economist-type folks here in the U.S., and independently from each other, they don't know each other, but we've heard from several sources that people really feel like the direction that the Zambian economy needs to go in is towards agriculture.
Uh-huh.
And so we're looking at things like industrial hemp, soybeans.
Like what?
Industrial hemp.
Uh-huh.
Planting soybeans, because soy products have a huge potential to take off in Africa.
Uh-huh.
And canaf, which is the product that, it's like an alternative, it's a plant that you can make paper from.
Uh-huh.
We at Living Compassion prints all of their materials on this canaf stuff. So there is a lot of potential for agriculture. It's a big direction we want to head in the next few years.
Yeah, yeah.
And as far as we can tell, can you hear me okay, George?
Just barely.
Well, Jen and I are trading phones furiously here. Well, as far as we can tell, the country itself, it's not a poor country resource-wise. It's not difficult to grow food there.
Uh-huh.
There's actually outside of Lusaka, we haven't seen it in a while because we haven't been going near Lusaka, but there's an area of this huge, just really beautiful, obviously productive farms.
Yeah.
And so if the infrastructure is there, like the irrigation that Jen was talking about, then, you know, there's a chance for people to grow huge amounts of food. But
yeah.
It's like everything else in Africa, you know, they're starting off with so little that it's like they have nothing to invest into it, and so it just kind of grinds to a halt.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. I think I sent you an email on the Kiva program,
yep.
which is an yep. online program where you can, it's beautifully set up, the website. You can yep. go there, and you can choose to loan money to it's a micro... microeconomic thing where you can loan money to a particular individual who might be starting a market stand or might be starting a garden project or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're looking for, you know, $200, $500, $800 to get started. And it's just a beautiful setup the way they're doing it.
Yeah, and in fact... I don't know, Michael, if Sherry talked last week about, there was a conference over the weekend that Sherry participated in, and it was, and the fellow who started Kiva was at the conference.
Ah.
And I said, you must tell him that he's doing something right, because
yeah.
everyone I'm meeting these days says, now I found this organization who's doing this great
credit.
But microcredit is clearly the direction that development in Africa is headed in.
Uh-huh.
We're seeing it in all directions. We actually had a meeting this last trip with a fellow from a local Zambian microcredit organization. We're looking at starting a bank right in Cantalomba for microcredit. We have some potential partnerships for people who are interested in assisting us with microcredit. So,
oh, great.
Yeah, you're right
yeah.
on, George, that's definitely the direction to head in.
Yeah.
For sustainable development in Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it's the way that's really kind for people, you know, because it empowers the people who are there to make the difference for themselves if they want to, and in a way that it's not like it's a gift. It's more,
yeah.
It's more of a... It's kind of just a tablet for their self-empowerment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of it's a missing ingredient. It's a catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just reading today the fellow who started Grameen Bank, which is a microcredit bank now all over the world. He actually won a Nobel Peace Prize for it. And that's exactly his point, what Dave was just saying, that you know, these are folks, actually, the return rates for microcredit are way above traditional loan repayment percentages. So, you know, people thought, well, we're not going to lend money to the poor, we'll never get it back. And in fact,
yeah.
it's completely the opposite. It's not
yeah.
true at all.
Yeah.
It's not only is it smart on a development level, it's, as Dave is saying, it's such a beautiful way to empower people. and it's smart business, so it's kind of a win all around.
Yeah. The other thing it does that, I'm not sure if we talked about this, but I've noticed, is that it puts money in the hands of the women. Within the there's not really, culturally, there's not a really a way that that happens.
Yeah.
It's very hard for a woman to, who has a kind of an entrepreneurial spirit, to do anything about that. But, you know, from the outside, without the kind of cultural blocks that, that are there, you know, we can directly... we can directly change that dynamic with kind of with the people we know within the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. The other thing I was thinking about is and I know I'm going to think of the name of this organization. There's an organization in Florida that is working in very, very poor areas in South America, and they are using things like garbage, old bottles and cans and things like that, to help people grow food on their roofs in you know, the slum areas of some of the large cities down there. And their techniques are really quite amazing. Using, and I was thinking about the garbage there. You know, for instance, filling up a bottle with water and turning it upside down and pointing it in, pushing it into the soil next to a plant as a very micro way of it's a micro irrigation system.
Yeah, that's a fascinating idea. And you know, we're running around talking to people who are doing work in Africa and other places, it's amazing how many just incredibly brilliant ideas like that there are. Sherry was just talking the other day at this conference she was at. She met a guy who's figured out how to make building blocks, like you would build a house out of old plastic bags, like you would get from the grocery store. And of course, Africa is covered in old plastic bags. And so, you know, it's just people are just so innovative, and they're bringing all that innovation, you know, the ones who have kind of the heart for it, to what's going on in Africa. And I just, you know, it's hard to imagine that some kind of huge difference isn't going to be made through all of that.
Wow, it sounds like it's just exploding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, great to catch you guys.
Thanks for calling, George.
Yeah. Great to hear your voice, George.
And I'd love to come to Africa sometime.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been thinking about
that
a lot.
Good point. Yep.
We'll see if it happens.
Yep.
God willing.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Jen, Dave, we have about another minute or two. If you have any final words you'd like to share or inspirations, I've really enjoyed the show today a lot.
Yeah, it's been fun, Michael. We, you know, Dave and I were saying at the break, we have to kind of be careful when we start talking about Africa. We start talking a million miles a minute. We get so excited and enthusiastic. So it's just, it's an incredible privilege to get to do, I mean, as Dave was saying, we get to go to Africa and then we participate in practice here, and you know, it's all practice, and then we get to be on the radio show, and it's just a pleasure to be a part of you know, this Living Compassion Worldwide Sangha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you what really inspires me is coming back from Africa and running into people who have been reading the blog.
Yes.
You know, it's just, there's just something that's really, really neat about that. It's like we all get to participate. I mean, you know, it's hard, you know, Jen and I, well, I'll speak for myself. It's easy to imagine Jen feels the same way, that, you know, I feel like I'm one of the most privileged people on the planet to be able to participate in this way.
Yeah.
And it's neat that that it's not just that. That, you know, we're all participating in something, and it's something really beautiful. And so we all get that. And so, you know, when we come back and we find out that people have been following along and people know the names of the people in Africa and they're excited that this is happening to that person and this happened to that person, it just, it gives us a little thrill.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great. Thanks so much for joining me today. It's been a great thrill.
Thank you, Michael.
And let's not forget the annual celebration in a couple weeks.
Annual celebration on May 17th. Everything is online at livingcompassion.org.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye, Michael.